The SparkFile podcast may contain profanity and other adult content.
Please use your discretion.
When I bump into something that inspires me, I dump it in my SparkFile. Could be something that I want to make or how I want to be. I pump it in my SparkFile. I jump into my SparkFile. Let's open up the SparkFile.
Welcome to the SparkFile, your Cobra Kai dojo for creative inspiration.
I'm Laura Camion.
And I'm Susan Blackwell. If you're an OG listener, welcome back, Sparkler. If you're joining us for the first time, know that all are welcome here.
Whether your creativity has been on pause or during this time, you've clung to it like a lifeline. Welcome.
Welcome, welcome. But you might be asking yourself, what exactly is a spark file? Where do I get one? What do I file in it? These are such good questions, and we have got answers. Mm-hmm.
A spark file is a place where you consistently collect all your inspirations and fascinations.
Here's the deal. This is Susan Blackwell. If you're new to us, this is my voice. I'm a little drunk. Just kidding. I don't drink. But here's the deal. We are makers who make all kinds of things.
If you're like us and you're making stuff all the time or want to be making stuff all the time, you know the wellspring of inspiration. It can run a little dry, especially now.
Yes, but don't despair. We have us, and we are on the lookout for fresh ideas, images, and inspiration that spark our creativity and pique our curiosity, things that inspire us to get up off of our asses and make things like this podcast.
Or a reimagined vision board for your life.
Or a catch-up episode that brings us back online, back into the present moment.
Hey, every episode we're going to reach into the spark file and exchange some sparks. And from time to time, we're going to talk to some folks who spark us too.
And if you're not careful, you might just get some much needed refreshment. So without further ado, let's open up the spark file.
I don't know why we say file as though it's two syllables.
I just noticed this for the first time in our intro script.
Yeah.
I spell ado wrong. So without further ado.
Adieu.
Like it's French. Let's open up Le Spark file. Oh. Hi, Camion.
Hi, Blackwell. I'm a little rusty. I don't think we should change that intro. I just want to acknowledge that's a little rust on the gears.
I feel like everybody should just get ready for a little bit of rust through this whole episode. I do.
I'm sparked by it. I'm going to do a whole spark on rust. How about that? The beauty of rust and artwork that can be made from rust, it eventually rusts out completely and it's gone.
If that's what you did, I would. I know you're making that up, but I think you're making that up.
I don't know. But I'm sort of inspired.
We should say this episode's going to be a little bit of a departure from a normal episode. True. I don't need to explain it to you. Every episode we surprise each other with some sparks, and from time to time we talk with sparkish people. But this episode, we've been on our little hiatus for a minute, and so you had the great idea, which was let's do a little bit of catch up on some sparks from the past.
What we like to call previously on the spark file. Bits happened and we talked about a lot of things. Last year we did a lot of episodes and we talked about a lot of things, and those things have evolved. So
what do you mean?
Fun.
Oh, you mean episodes that we recorded in 2019 last year?
Yeah, 2019, 2020.
Okay. I got confused for a second. But that is not surprising. How's your break been? I say break in quotes.
Break.
It hasn't been a break.
Give me a break.
You think we've been sitting over here eating bonbons?
Come on.
Drinking,
you know,
sherry.
On my best day, I'm a calm duck on the surface, treading water underneath. That's my best day. On my worst day, I'm just completely upside down in the water and, you know, kaput.
And so you're just a duck upside down in the water with your little feet going, meow, 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 meow. I think through this whole pandemic roller coaster ride, I had probably – And this is saying something. I think I probably had my worst week was last week.
You made it a long, long way down this road before having a week like that, which I was very impressed. I'm sorry that you, that it eventually hit you, but I was impressed by just how long it took for a week like that to smack
you in the ass. I'm telling
you though,
when it hit me, boy, it hit me hard. Not to be mysterious. There was like just a lot hit on one week. There was some emergency room visits in the family. There were some emergency room, middle of the night emergency room visits with our beloved dog POTUS. He's better now.
No.
He is so much better. He's like a different little man now. And other stuff.
It was rough. Yeah.
Yeah. Just like a lot of like disappointment, loss. I feel better now. I feel better now. Right. I'm happy to say, but I was like, okay. And please, like relative to things that other people have gone through, I'm living the life of Riley, but it was, it just all caught up with me last week, just in time for us to come back online.
Woo!
And share some sparks
and
with you.
And say welcome back.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know you had a really, really tough week. I was hugging you from afar.
I know. In the midst of all that, I did have the presence of mind to send you. Just remember this.
Oh my God. The best gift
that I gotten for you, because I was obsessed with it. So I got for me and got for you. Do you want to say what it is? You want me to say what it is?
You can say what it is, but I'm going to chime in with how awesome
I was just really smitten by this. For, you know, I just love design and I love home design and stuff like that. And it was
mid-century.
It's this sort of roly-poly tissue.
You guys, it's
box.
Round. It actually doesn't.
It's
even
a round
have a flat
tissue dispenser.
It's totally round.
If you can imagine it, imagine a Pac-Man that's three-dimensional. So just like a complete sphere with its little mouth cut out, and you
Pac-Man sort of rolled on his back.
Yeah,
so
you put tissues in his mouth, and it's But it's like a weeble wobble, like, and I just love it. It was like created in the 70s and then they reissued it. The same family who had originally sold it reissued it. And I just thought it was just so mod and so rad.
I love it. It was
and
so
I was
unexpected.
Like, I just sent it to you with a note that was like, this is so, we can dry each other's tears from a distance. You just
I
keep
know.
That little
and it was
ball
on a day
tissues.
That I knew you needed your tears dried. So then that made me cry even more. I was like, oh, Suze, because I knew you put it in the mail before you were feeling that way. And then when I got it, I was like, oh, I want to dry your tears from afar.
You're sweet. But never fear, because I have my own ball of tissues here. My own little Pac-Man coughing up tissues for me.
Balls of tissue. I love you for it. And thank you so much.
Maybe
we'll
post
some pictures of those. I think we should.
Maybe. Mm-hmm. Should we dive in? Should we do a little, just like a little fun? This was such a great idea, Cams. Just sort of like... Here's some sparks from that we have enjoyed in season one and just a little catch up.
Some light updates. Yeah. You might recall this one. This is super light. On December 9th of 2019, I shared a spark about the 1918 flu, also known as the Spanish flu.
Is crazy that on December 9th of 2019, you were sharing a spark with us about that famous
about a possible
flu
impending. Yeah, that flu.
And may I quote you? Yeah. It's not if another pandemic will occur. It's a question of when. And I was like, Cams, don't scare me.
I know. I feel bad. I'm sorry I said it, but it wasn't. I'm sure I was quoting someone else, like an epidemiologist because originally. The reason I was reminded of it is that we had just done that conversation with Zachary Quinto. And Zachary had said, you know, my grandpa in Philadelphia died of that flu. I forget which one. And I was like, the flu of 1918? Do you know anything about it? And he's like, not really. And I was like, oh my God. And then I nerded out for a minute. And then I was like, I need to calm down, and B, I need to go back into my Spark file because the reason this has always sparked me is I had read a book called Flu. It is an incredible book. And of course, now it's will seem way out of date because it is essentially trying to warn people of how most of these flus, most of these viruses come from animals and birds in particular. And we can expect that that another one's on the way. And and she names all these different times when they had caught it in time to squelch it, basically. And that there are people whose job it is to do that. Like they monitor like hospital reports, I guess. And they're like, oh, strange symptoms here, strange symptoms there. And they're all, that's their job. It's, I just, it's incredible. So anyway, that conversation reminded me and I needed to, it was like, it's one of the, some of the sparks, I know you know this, like some of the sparks in our spark files are like light and breezy and it's like, oh, I could pluck that one and do it tomorrow and, or talk for 15 minutes on it and call it complete. But then there's these other sparks that are like, it's so massive and so like feels important to me and I want it to be done right. And that was one of those where it's like you're, you know, it's 10 pounds of spark in a 5 pound bag, that sort of thing where you're sort of like, I'm trying to cram all the good stuff in here. So anyway, that was one of those and cut to, you know, almost a year later and here we are. It's so crazy. You know, we had talked at that time too of like the number of deaths of the flu of 1918. And really the estimates are anywhere from 20 million to 50 million, which is entirely too broad of a, even to call that an estimate. But, you know, records and all that, they don't, they really can't narrow it more than that. But it was deadlier than like all the soldiers and all the civilians killed in World War One. And right now we're currently approaching 1 million deaths worldwide. I think we're at 980,000 or something, 200,000 in the US. And the scariest part of that, so just reflecting back, the scariest part of like what I learned about the 1918 flu was the second wave, because that's really when like it got stronger and way more people were killed, which is why a lot of people have more anxiety about this winter, which is not great. But other things, just some updates, other things that, you know, we didn't talk about that I think are interesting. Bootleg whiskey saw a huge increase in 1918. So we're in the midst, if you can imagine what we're going through now, they were going through then, but they also had prohibition. So if you need a stiff drink at the end of the days like this, like you couldn't have one. So bootlegging, what, like, you know, just, we all know a million stories
set up
about
your
bootlegging.
Own still, but, make that bathtub gin.
And I think now like booze sales are up along with puzzles and Pelotons, as far as I know.
That's, I feel like you called puzzles too. Amazing.
Puzzles, another one. Yep. But here's a fun thing. Fun fact.
After fun flu, flu fact.
Fun flu fact. After the flu and after World War One, we got the Roaring Twenties. And it was a decade of growth and prosperity and partying. And if you think about it, people being, you know, trapped in their homes and wearing masks and away from each other and separate. And then honestly, just wanting to, once they were safe and felt able to, just wanting to get back together and let loose. And that was the Roaring Twenties. I read this really interesting article that gave me some hope in humanity. This article in The Atlantic by Yasha Monk. And Yasha Monk talked about in 1974, there was a sociologist named Jim Fowles who coined the term chronocentrism, which is the belief that one's own times are paramount and that all other periods in time pale in comparison. And I thought this was so interesting because we're so in the midst of it. Like, these feel like end times. These feel like the world has never been as bad as this. But it has been in many different times, in many different ways. And we have recovered. And although we're living now at this time where, you know, people are predicting this is the end of hugs, this is the end of handshakes, right, and casual sex is no more, and no more parties and concerts and theater. But Monk writes, throughout history, humanity has again and again experienced pestilence. And through these bouts of infectious disease, even though they've had all kinds of long-lasting consequences, they've never stopped people from seeking out one another's company. 5 or 10 years from now, there will be as many gatherings, mass gatherings, as there were before the coronavirus, because we're human.
Absolutely. And I think even more so, talk about like the roaring 20s. Once there's a reliable vaccine, or once there's, you know, rapid testing so that people can really safely come back together again, but really a vaccine, I feel like the lid is going to get blown off.
Hell
yes. And people are going to have not even a renewed, but for some people, maybe for the first time, a gratitude for something that they had, they loved, that was taken away and then given back to them, which is my latest, this is my latest like spark obsession, where I didn't tell you this, Cammie. The student was telling me that they have this disease of the eyes where basically, I think it's like they're a piece of their eye, like their cornea, basically eats itself.
Oh, no.
And they had to have surgery so that they could then wear corrective lenses. So they have their vision back now. And the reason why I forgot to tell you this, that I wanted to tell you this, is because they listened to the Spark File while they couldn't see, because there wasn't a lot of thing. There weren't a lot of things they could do, but they could listen to podcasts. So they said they listened to the Spark File. They sent their love to us.
Oh my gosh, that's beautiful.
I was like, that's another example of, you have something, you kind of maybe take it for granted. It gets taken away from you, maybe temporarily. And when you get it back, it's the roaring 20s, baby.
That's right. And I think that that connection to other human beings is exactly, you know, that dynamic. It's been taken away. Maybe we had crammed full our schedules before to where you would like lament having to go and do things with other people. And, and you know, now I think you will do it, or hopefully we'll all do it, with a renewed sense of like being fully present with the person. And just like being reminded of that basic need to connect and to touch someone, to look each other in the eye, to feel the energy of a single person, or feel the energy of a collective group experience.
Yeah. I wonder if the listeners are also like, you took away our podcast after season one and now you're back and I appreciate it even more. Maybe. Sorry to say.
I mean, I'm happy to be back. And So the flu of 1918, who knew?
Who knew
when we gave that spark that it was going to be anything more than just a little walk down memory lane?
Yeah. It still blows my mind. I still tell people, I'm like, Camian predicted this. That was pretty crazy. I had never thought about a pandemic until you did that spark. And then at least you gave me a little preparation. You gave me a little bit of preparation for it. I'll give you that. So here's a little update. A while back, I did a spark about Scotty Bowers. For those of you who, Scotty Bowers is the gentleman who lived out in Hollywood, ran a gas station. He not only serviced cars there, he serviced a lot of people's sexual needs. And then he wasn't a pimp because he didn't take money for it, but he sort of became this kind of like a sexual matchmaker for people. And he's just this really fascinating character who had a lot of sex and made it possible for a lot of other people to have a lot of sex.
And we're talking about like the 1940s and 50s when it was not, you were not free to have sex with who you might have wanted to have sex with. Correct.
And if you were a movie star, like if you're in the, you know, if you're under contract at a major Hollywood film studio, if you are a very known public figure, if you're a Katharine Hepburn, if you're a Spencer Tracy, you might have to really go underground to get your needs met. And Scotty Bowers would help set you up.
Would so, be right there.
So I believe there's still question about, you know, are these stories true? It's hard to verify many of them because a lot of the players are no longer with us. Scotty Bowers
And a lot of work went into keeping those secrets.
Yes,
like a
absolutely.
Lot of high-powered studios wanted to keep all that secret.
Yeah. But I have to say, like doing that spark, I was like, I believe Scotty Bowers. I believed his claims.
Yeah.
It just felt authentic to me, but that's just one person's opinion. In any event, I thought he was such a fascinating figure, and apparently so did Ryan Murphy, because a while back on Netflix, Ryan Murphy released the show Hollywood, and in it, the centerpiece of this series is a gas station sex ring run by a character named Ernie, who was played by Dylan McDermott, and Ernie was partly based on Scotty Bowers. And Bowers died in 2019 at the age of 96. And I don't know, I just thought it was so interesting.
It was amazing because you had just done the Spark. I think we did the Spark around the time that we did that event at United Palace about... oh my God, what's the name of the movie? The Philadelphia Story.
Yep.
And we were looking for sparks around, you know, that sort of inspired by that movie, anything connected related
to it.
That's
right. So I went Philadelphia Story to Kate Hepburn to Scotty Bowers.
That's right.
Yeah.
And then I think just a few months later, I started to see on Netflix these trailers for what was called Hollywood. The show was just called Hollywood on Netflix. And now, of course, a lot of people have seen it. And I think there might be, I think a season two is coming.
Oh.
Which is interesting. So
did you watch it?
I didn't.
Oh, how was it?
I did. I enjoyed it. I really did. I mean, I like that sort of, I like old Hollywood history.
You do.
And I like the,
you know,
juicy stories. I could probably go a little bit deeper. This stayed a little light. But hopefully it will continue to, you know, dig in over.
You know who has a heck of a spark file is Ryan Murphy. I feel like Ryan Murphy catches a spark and turns it into television maybe it just seems like it. He'll take things that seem maybe I'm behind the curve and he's ahead of the curve and we sort of meet somewhere. But a lot of the things that he explores are they sort of a Venn diagram of overlap of things that I'm interested in as well. He's got a good spark file.
Yeah. I agree. And like mine also intersects with his, and I think it's like in different ways than yours. So it's like, that tells you the scope of his, like you can like meet it at different places, but I think he's fast to take action, which I think is really incredible. Like from spark to getting the work done, that guy makes it happen.
He really, really does. Yeah.
I'm impressed. Suze, I wanted to update you on, this is the tiniest but sweetest little update.
Tiny sweet little update.
One of our favorite listeners, Joe Cutrona, sent this to us.
Hi,
Joe. And I just delighted in it. I was just honestly like, just delight. That's the only word I can think of. I was so fucking delighted. Joe sent it via Instagram. But remember when I did the spark on Kintsugi which is the Japanese art of repair or golden repair.
Yeah.
And it's that repair that, like, they typically use liquid gold to repair broken pottery or glass.
Love that. Love it.
And it's all about, like, highlighting and celebrating your scars rather than trying to hide them. Well, Joe sent me Lego Suki, which is like fixing broken things, but with Legos. I'm going to send you some pictures,
Suze.
Look at your Instagram. I just sent you.
What?
Yes. For those of you who can't see Susan's Instagram right now, it's like there's a mug with a handle that's broken, but now the handle is Legos. That's super simple. But there's like a little
it's
table.
It's amazing.
Yes, there's like a table. The leg is broken, and the table's brown, and so one of the legs has been made with brown Legos, only in the shape of like a tree and little green Lego leaves. And it's like just not hiding the fact that this was a broken table, but now it's made even better and more beautiful by these Legos.
This is so great.
Is this not delightful?
Joe, well done.
Joe, thanks for sending this. And this little cuckoo clock that was broken, but now has a little Lego bird that pops out. I mean, it was really, really sweet. It made me very, very happy.
Lego Suki, everybody. Okay, here's one for you. Man, 2020 has been rough. So
tough.
It's been some challenges. I did a spark on mudlarking, and if you haven't listened to that spark yet, go back, give it
a
listen.
It's one of my favorites. And now also, Suze, I follow a woman who is a mudlarker on Instagram and see all of her little treasures. And they're amazing.
Is she in London? Is she?
I think so. Yes. I'm sure I got her name from you. Yeah.
Yeah. I follow her too. And I wish I had it on my fingertips, but I don't. So I did a piece about mudlarking. And if you don't know, mudlarking is where you go to, it can be like along a riverbank, it can be along a body of water. But there are certain locations that, because of the things that were buried there historically or the way the tides literally churn, these locations like cough up a bunch of historical flotsam and jetsam. So there's very famous mudlarking on the Thames, and there is mudlarking in Dead Horse Bay here in New York. And I'm just going to read to you from Atlas Obscura. Dead Horse Bay is a popular place for urban archaeology enthusiasts with strong stomachs and closed-toed shoes. Part of the Gateway National Recreation Area, it is managed by the National Park Service, which means that visitors have been able to look but not take. Now, we all know that artists and people and visitors have been taking, but okay. But as of August 2020, even gawking is off limits. After detecting chemical contaminants back in 2002 and gamma radiation in 2019, the Park Service recently declared part of the area closed to everyone but authorized personnel. So essentially, in 2019,
I was so bummed.
This is such a bummer. They detected 31 spots where gamma radiation exceeded ambient levels. And in 9 of those, they found that in some deck markers, which apparently are these flat glowing circles that were meant to illuminate structures or paths in the dark, they had apparently contaminated portions of the surrounding soil with radium. So 84 of Dead Horse Bay's 178 acres are currently off limits because a visitor could potentially be exposed to radiological contamination or man-made radiological articles, either from unauthorized digging and surfacing a deck marker or other man-made radiological articles. So they're going to do more sampling. They're going to assess what cleanup might look like. And I've got to tell you, I have a feeling, just a funny feeling, they're going to kick this can down the road again. I feel like they put all of this waste in the ground originally. Mm-hmm. They sort of capped it off with some topsoil, and then they were like, spit spot, we're all done here. And the earth has been like coughing, literally like mm-hmm. coughing it up. And it doesn't like, it's not washing in with the tide. It is being coughed up out of the earth. And I wish they would clean it up effectively, but they haven't done it yet. I don't know.
Well, anyway. Also there's a fear, I think, that if they clean it up, they might do so just by like just taking all that stuff, dumping it like somewhere else, moving it.
Yeah.
And like all those little treasures to be lost again forever.
It's all of it is just like a giant bummer. And mm-hmm. I remember I tried really hard to go after I did that spark. I really wanted to go visit. And there was one day in our busy lives, there was one day where it would have been possible to go before the weather turned cold.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't get to go. And I sort of missed that little window of opportunity. But now it looks like what good luck, what bad luck, because I didn't get radium poisoning. So good for me.
Yay.
So hooray. And since we're just in a bummer spin, let's just take it one notch down further. Y'all, I did a spark. I did a spark where I talked about how much I loved the documentary series Cheer, and specifically how much I loved Jerry Harris from Cheer. Y'all,
yeah.
2020, I don't want to sound like a meme. Like I don't ascribe to that,
yeah.
But 2020 is killing me. Like, so if you haven't heard the story, please brace for impact.
Yes, beloved character. Warning.
Yeah, and trigger warning. The beloved character, he's not a character, he's a person. He was a person on this reality TV series, Jerry mm-hmm. Harris, who was just like a total breakout star. He just was out
Everybody
there and he was doing red
him.
Carpet stuff. Everybody yeah. loved him. And he was arrested last week and charged with producing child pornography. So he is in custody now. And I mean, if you want to read more about it, you all can read about it to your heart's content. Yeah. I don't need to go into it here, but like it just bums me out because whenever I hear something like that, I just feel like it points to other abuses and things like that.
Yeah.
And it just bums me out hard. So that it was a bummer.
That
I don't know what else to say about it, but the 2020 is killing me.
Yeah.
On a lighter note,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
on a lighter
Let's
tip,
go lighter. Yeah.
Our very first episode of The Spark File, my spark was Hilma Off Klimt, who did this, she didn't do it. She's been gone for a long time, but the Guggenheim Museum in New York did this amazing exhibit of Hilma Off Klimt. If you don't know about Hilma, I would recommend that you get to know Hilma. Go back, listen to that first episode.
So good.
It's so weird. When we decided to do this episode, I didn't know it would be such a plug fest, but I guess it is. So rock on. But it like that for me, even though it was like I love that spark. Oh my gosh. And I love Hilma Off Klimt.
Mm-hmm.
I love her work. I love how she just like, she's just like a cannonball through art history. I just love her.
And ahead of her time in so many ways.
Yes.
And seek the recognition.
Like Blazing Trails, much. Not for any, not because she wanted, what's that word? Legacy.
Yeah.
She wasn't looking for legacy. She was just blazing trails because she was a trailblazer. Amazing.
So, cool.
So here's a fun fact. Cool. More than 600,000 visitors attended Hilma Off Klimt Paintings for the Future. It is the highest recorded attendance figure for a single exhibition in the Guggenheim's history. Guggenheim Museum membership increased 34%. Since
Amazing.
The exhibition opened, more than 30,000 copies of the exhibition catalog were sold, surpassing the previous record set by the 2009 catalog Kandinsky. Boom! Take that, Kandinsky!
Boom.
Shablam! And since October 2018, so about 2 years ago, Hilma Off Klimt inspired products in the Guggenheim store have accounted for 42% of total store sales. And that's, I got to tell you, I spent some of my money at that Guggenheim store.
That's crazy. I did too. That's nuts.
I hope that some of that money goes to the Hilma Off Clint Foundation.
I'm sure it does.
And I hope they do good work. I don't even know if that exists or what they do. I think it does exist. But even if what they do is they, I'm making all of this up, but I hope that they get the good word out about Hilma. And well, what a badass she is.
We know what they're doing is protecting that entire collection because she said it cannot be sold piece by piece.
Right.
So that foundation is responsible for A, keeping it all together and, you know, obviously making it visible through the Guggenheim. That was well done.
I wonder if Hilma can see through. She seems like the kind of person that really could see through time and space after her passing and just get a kick out of what's happening. Or maybe she wouldn't care, or maybe she'd be horrified. I don't know. But I love Hilma Off Clint, and I hope that if you haven't heard that name before, you'll take a deep dive on that. So what else? What other fun stuff? Oh, I did a spark about the Show Must Go On line, which in which I told the story about how the Orange County School of the Arts and their Musical Theater Conservatory had put together a beautiful virtual production of Now Hear This when their live theatrical production was canceled due to the pandemic. And I have got to tell you, since that happened and since that spark sparked itself, I have been really moved by all the ways that people are doing things virtually, whether that's theater or making connections with each other or things that would have previously. Yes, pivot, hashtag pivot. Mm-hmm. I thought that you were telling me about something really cool that your alma mater was doing.
Yes, yes. I was super, super excited. I was contacted by Kansas State University, where I went to college, and
K-State.
The theater director there is turning their theater season into a podcast, and all of them are getting to do. Think about it. They're getting to do the vocal work. They're doing. They each got their microphones and professional equipment set up.
Brilliant.
And they're doing like Shakespeare. They're doing other works that are in the public domain. And they've selected some plays and screenplays written by alum to do it. And they chose one of my screenplays called One Dead, One Dying. I know. I'm super excited. It'll be a main stage production.
Nice.
I'm just kidding. What's a main stage production in a podcast? it's going to be the November. It'll
I
be in the November.
It's the same
slot
as a black box production, isn't it?
That's right. It's in whatever theater.
So will we get to listen
in
to it?
We all can listen to it. Yes. And you can subscribe to their podcast. It's called Kansas Theater Works.
Aww.
And their whole season is going to be on like delivered via podcast.
Okay. I think that's brilliant. And I have to say, I kind of lightly have my finger on the pulse of what educational theater is doing around the country. And this is one idea I could really get behind. You know, I love podcasts and I love theater, but I also love, like, there's no need. We can still do really interesting, enriching educational work without having to come into a room together and potentially put ourselves at risk. Now, I know some schools have made the decision to do that. Live and be well. But when you told me this, I was like, that is brilliant. And I love that they're calling it Kansas Theater Works because it's sort of like, isn't there LA Theater Works?
That is exactly the reference. That's exactly the reference. And I think they're just going to put it on the map. I'm so impressed.
I love it.
I think about like the students getting an opportunity for their work to be heard well beyond who could have, you know, enjoyed their work if it were
stage. Got that reach, baby.
And I mean, I'll have to check with Jennifer, but she said that even if, you know, if everything went exceedingly well and everyone was on campus at some point in the year, that their set designer was prepared to even like create these little vocal booths on stage and the Foley work. So they would still be recording the podcast as planned, but if they were allowed to have a live audience come and see them do it, they could do that safely. And I just thought, how freaking cool.
So cool.
Yeah, I'm super excited to be a part of it and support them. And I'm just so proud. Like, what a great idea.
You can get, I don't know. I love this idea. In other fun news, other places, other theaters have been doing now here this virtually. So we have... There was a summer program at UCLA. They did a virtual production of Now Hear This in 3 weeks.
Oh my gosh. In three weeks,
which is really fast. If you've ever done on-camera work, that's really, really fast. That's Ryan Murphy fast. And we also just got the back translation for a production of Now Hear This in Spanish that I think is being done in Mexico City.
Oh my God, that's amazing.
Starting to make its way around the world, make its way into other languages, which is always super fun.
Well, you have done so much work to make it so accessible. Yes. So accessible in so many ways for any size of group, any gender makeup, any, you know, any combination of people can tell this story, which I think is phenomenal.
1,000,000%. Yeah. And also you can tell it. You want to do it live? Do it live. You want to do it virtual? Do it virtual. You want to do it in a bar? Do it in a bar. Amazing. You've got 1 million cast members? Great. You've got 4? Great.
Love it.
Yeah, I love it too. And it's really gratifying because that was a real puzzle to do that. And I have to tell you, Cams, it's been super gratifying to hear theater makers come back and say, this puzzle really works. It really works in, because we weren't thinking virtually when we set it up.
Of course.
But yeah, when we set up the flexible version, but they're like, it really works in the virtual format. And who could have predicted a pandemic besides Laura Camion? But I'm so happy we were ready to rock.
Yeah.
Because I checked with a theater journalist because I don't know. I'm not a journalist and I don't know how to do journalistic research, but they were like, I think you can safely say it's one of the first full-length virtual musicals that came out of the pandemic, high school or otherwise. And I haven't heard anybody tell me that there was one earlier. I'm crazy proud of that and of that school, of the Orange County School of the Arts for doing that. So,
yes. I was reflecting back and thinking about the episode that I did on self-reliance, which was really about the show alone. And
you tried to class it up, but really,
you know what? I made it sound like some quotes from Walt Whitman, whatever, but it was really about the show alone. And the thing is, you started watching alone. And if nothing else happened due to season one, that would be enough.
I love it. If we made 96 episodes of a podcast and the takeaway is I watched the reality television show alone. And that would be enough.
That would be enough.
We started watching alone because it was something that the whole household could agree on. And it was just the right temperature for the beginning of the pandemic. There was something about it that really just seeing people in nature, seeing people isolated, separated, and alone, and challenged by it, but working through it or tapping out. Or like celebrating when they caught a fish and they were going to be able to, you know, live another day.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. We really, really enjoyed that. You're
nothing
right.
Nothing made me happier.
If we've gotten nothing else out of this podcast, we've gotten alone.
I'm satisfied. I feel good. I feel really good about it.
You feel good about that?
I do. And then that one reminded me of another one about nature. And remember when we talked about Teddy Roosevelt?
Do I ever? Yes,
do I Teddy ever? Roosevelt. And you know, I was like, he's a complicated man. And there are lots of things to celebrate. And there are some things not to celebrate. But one of the things that's got me thinking about him recently is that, of course, he established the national parks. Yeah. So Yosemite and Yellowstone and Zion and Glacier and Joshua Tree, all of them, like this whole national park system. After he became president, he established like 150 national forests, 51 federal bird reserves, 4 national game preserves, national parks, 18 national monuments, all of this on like 230 million acres of public land. And it was all about preserving this land for use by American citizens. And holy crap, I think we took advantage of them this year. I think more people than ever went to those national parks, went to seek out places in nature. Like they really served as a place where families and individuals could go to get away during all of this.
Yes.
And I mean, that was a good thing and a bad thing. So I definitely read some stories about like a little bit of overtaxing the natural environment to suddenly have this overload of people. But ultimately I felt inspired by the reminder of, how much we need nature. And if one of the results of all this is that people are reminded of that and people strengthen their connection to that sense of, you know, being a part of this greater world, that's pretty cool.
That is pretty cool. I love that. I had actually hadn't thought of that. And at some point during the pandemic, I think I stopped reading the news because I didn't want to get I just have to be really mindful of my intake. I didn't completely stop, but I just have to be mindful of my intake. And that hadn't struck me what you just said. I love that.
Well, you know, the 50s, as you're well aware, was like this sort of road trip paradise. Like it was the height of these like campers and national parks. And we haven't seen that much action in these parks since the 50s, essentially. Yeah.
It's hard to find an RV for sale right now.
That's right.
Yeah.
Like legit. People are like, let's just downsize and let's take it on the road.
Yeah.
Pretty cool. Pretty cool.
I'm going the opposite direction. I'm just like buying everything I can find on eBay. It's been great. I'm upsizing. I'm trying to get that trending. That should be the name of our first book, Upsizing.
Upsizing.
Speaking of nature, here's a little update. I did a spark on Armchair Treasure Hunters. And if you don't know what that is, go listen to that.
Listen to that episode. That's your answer for everything.
That's right. Just go back and listen. It's just all a pitch for you to go back and listen. But one of the people that created one of the greatest armchair, it wasn't even an armchair treasure hunt. It was a full-on boots on the ground treasure hunt was Forrest Fenn. Something of a controversial figure because while he did activate so many people to get out in nature and look for this amazing treasure that he had planted somewhere in the Rockies, there people died looking for the treasure. The authorities begged him to call off the treasure hunt and he would not do it. I can't remember if we talked about it on the podcast. I know we talked about it that the treasure was found. Spoiler alert, the treasure was found after I posted that spark.
Yeah.
We did talk about that. But then since we have been on break, on September 7th, 2020, Forrest Fenn passed away. So he lived a hell of a life. And I feel like he lived his best life in his later life. Like he really seemed to have the time of his life with this whole treasure hunt that he had created and all the, just the swirl of activity around that. And then Camion yesterday, of this taping, the finder of the treasure who had previously been unidentified and remains unidentified, posted a blog on medium.com about their experience finding the treasure.
Oh my God.
Connecting with Forrest Fenn and then slipping back into anonymity.
Oh my gosh.
Breaking news, baby.
What? Breaking what did they news. Say? What do we know about them? Now the search is on to figure out who found the treasure.
The new treasure. That, oh my God.
They are the new treasure.
If this was the sequel to the movie, they would be the new treasure and people would be trying to find them. So we don't, they have maintained their anonymity. They don't reveal how they identify gender-wise, none of it. The only thing that they say that's identifying at all is they say, I'm a millennial. They identify them. They identify themselves as a millennial. So they say, I'm just going to read a little tiny piece of this blog.
Okay.
Alas, I'm a millennial and have student loans to pay off, so it wouldn't be prudent to continue to own the Fenn treasure. I was reading a thread on Reddit, went down that rabbit hole.
Always
millennials
reliable.
Are typically slotted as being born between 1981 and 1996, which means that this writer, the finder of the treasure, is probably between 24 and 39. The finder goes on to write, at the end of the day, for all our similarities, Forrest and I couldn't be less alike when it comes to collecting. I'm the kind of person who feels burdened by possessions and most free adventuring the world out of a carry-on suitcase. So the treasure and I will have to soon part, and I will offer it for sale, minus the turquoise robe bracelet returned to Forrest, of course. And there's a picture of Forrest. He has the treasure chest in front of him. It is aged. It is weathered. Mm. There are things in there. He doesn't remember doing it, but apparently he accidentally left a pair of scissors in with the treasure, and the scissors have completely corroded onto the object that was next to them. Yep. Rust. There's your spark, baby. In any event, there's a picture of Forrest and the finder of the treasure, it seems like, has given him back this turquoise bracelet that was in it. They go on, the finder goes on to write, it should belong to a person or institution who will fully appreciate owning such an incredible thing. But Forrest had a final wish for where he thought the treasure should end up. And if you remember, Laura, he wanted it to end up in a museum. Like he wanted the story to be told. So, and to inspire others to adventure, essentially. So so the finder says, the first step for me will be to try to make that happen, meaning to honor Forrest's wishes. Mm-hmm. As for the legacy of Forrest's chase, I suppose it is in many ways in my hands, as wrong as that feels. To be honest, I'm not sure what to do. Whatever. Making plans is antagonistic to freedom. You will see. I'll be back to answer some questions in any case. But no, not that one. Which I assume means they're not telling their identity.
Who are you?
Yeah. So, so this is so funny. So I jumped on Reddit and I was just reading like what people thought of it. What does Reddit think of this? And there was speculation on there that millennials don't call themselves that, that there's a bit of an insult built into that term, and that this is a small bit of evidence suggesting that an older person wrote that letter, likely Fenn himself. And basically the agreement was that this is all part of the overall hoax, that it's all just part of this narrative that potentially Forrest Fenn himself crafted.
Meaning he had everyone searching for this thing, only he knew where it was. Then he retrieved it, claimed that someone found it, and it's now poised to like go into a museum.
Yeah.
But all
I mean, I have questions too. I think it was real. I actually do think it was real. Or maybe
too.
I just believe everything Scotty Bowers tells me and that Forrest Fenn tells me. I just believe older white dudes in their 90s.
And you believe Reddit, which I think says something else.
Reddit. But I do think it was weird that they referred to themselves as a millennial.
Yeah.
I do think that's
weird.
I don't
think that means Fenn wrote it himself. I think it could, it could be someone trying to.
Yeah, but here's the thing. Like, if you're medium.com, where does that piece of writing come from so that you can verify that it is indeed written by the person who claims to have written it?
Well, anyone can have a blog on Medium. I have a blog on Medium that I haven't written in. I feel guilty. But I have a blog on Medium. Yeah. Yeah. Oh. Anyone can have, like, Medium is not like a journalistic source. Know. Yeah.
Okay. Well, then that could have been written by anybody.
Literally anyone.
I'm citing something that is just like angelfire.net. Oh my God, I'm so dumb.
No, I mean, I think it's interesting. Like, I believe maybe I'm
this
just
is why I'm not
gullible,
a journalist. I don't know.
Like, this person. No, I guess now we have to question everything.
We have to question it all.
Question
It's a
everything.
Good thing we're not journalists. That's all I want to say about it. But anyway, I thought that was an interesting update. And I'm sure it's, more on this story as it develops, because I feel like we'll keep hearing more about this treasure.
Totally.
I don't know. Yeah.
Totally. Anyway. And you also have to, like, think about the nature of the person who was invested in finding this treasure. They're problem solvers to begin with. So their mind is working to, like, find the problem, solve the problem, and ferret out, you know, the mystery here to be solved. And maybe there isn't one in this case. Maybe he really did write the clues, hide the thing, and hide the treasure, and maybe someone really did find it. And it's just not a very satisfying, it's not satisfying for the, you know, hundreds of thousands of other people who were trying to find it.
Yeah.
It's just kind of a bummer of like, oh, but someone found it. So that's awesome.
But what if they didn't?
But what if they didn't? One of my favorite episodes.
That's a different episode of the podcast you should go listen to.
That's
in any event.
In any event.
You got a little update for me.
I do have another, I think this might be my last update on our episodes. And I was thinking about the captain's log. You might recall
I recall fondly.
Thanks. I did this spark. It was like around the beginning of the shutdown. And I did this spark about being the captain of my own ship and how keeping a captain's log was really helping me to, like, order my thoughts. And I don't know, it was really, really helpful at that time. And of course, the spark was full of, like, cheesy maritime metaphors, all of which I stand by 100%. Just FYI, I am not retracting a single one. But after I did that spark, I came across something that I just wanted to kick myself for, like, not mentioning. It was, like, right in front of me.
This is a do-over for you. Yes, well, let me try that again.
It's this idea, and I saw it expressed in many ways, in many places on social media and beyond. But, you know, a lot of people were like, well, at least we're in the same boat. And in actuality, we are not in the same boat, but we are in the same storm. So I thought that distinction was really important. I've thought about it a lot of times, because as I'm complaining about, like, maybe working double the amount of hours that I worked before this pandemic, I'm aware that other people that I know are not working at all, but would really like to be. And I may worry about money, but I'm aware that other people have deeper financial worries, maybe no healthcare, maybe they have many children to support. Like, everyone's situation is different. And, you know, you can't ignore the privilege is at play. And just, like, where you were the moment it started and what your circumstances were then have so much to do with maybe the effect it's had on you mentally and physically, emotionally, financially, politically. Like, we just have no idea where anyone else is. I mean, shit, from day to day, I don't even know where I am. And I'm, like, checking in daily. Like, you know, today's a good day emotionally, and a bad one financially, or today's a great day physically, but mentally not so much. I just feel like I've thought about it so much that we are, yes, we're in the same storm. We're not on the same boat. Our boats are not equal. Some people, you know, got to go live in their third home in Aspen, you know, for this whole time.
Or just get out on their yacht, David Geffen.
Or just go out on the yacht. And other people are wondering how we can live in such a wealthy country and take people's healthcare away during a public health crisis. You know, like, we're just not struggling with all the same things, but I do believe that everyone is struggling. And it feels to me like the need to be compassionate and kind to each other and to ourselves just continues to be the theme that kind of tethers me to reality. Like,
I love that, Camion, but I have to, this is where the line between just our normal social interaction and this podcast blurs for me. Mm-hmm. Have you never said on this podcast, we are not in the same boat, but we are in the same storm? Or is that really something we've only talked about offline?
You know, I don't know. Maybe I did already say it as a follow-up. Maybe I said it in an episode later, because—
Listen, if there's a promise I can make you, it's that I'm not going to go back and check.
If someone does, there's $5
It's an idea, so nice. You heard it twice,
I might have, but one thing I know absolutely for certain is that I read this whole poem about not being in the same boat, but being in the same storm. And I read it like 2 days after we recorded that episode.
Uh-huh.
So I know for sure it's not in that episode. Now, I may have said it like a week later. I may have said, you know what I wish I would have said?
Well, this is a follow-up to that follow-up.
I'm following up one more time. This will be my last
just
message,
just in case
friends.
You missed it, listener. Listen.
Yeah, I just, I don't know. That has struck me because we're all dealing with this in our own way. And, you know, it kind of blends in with the spark about like you're doing enough. I have felt that throughout this whole time, just trying to remember we're all doing the best we can. And there are days when, you know, I burst into tears, or there are days that I'm just really angry and I don't think of myself as an angry person, but just everything's just making me angry that day. And those are the moments where I'm just like, we're getting through this as best we can. And we're hanging in. We're all in this storm together. And our circumstances are different and they change by the moment.
So I just heard you say that you have been working a lot. I've also been working a lot.
You have too,
But I'm just thinking of other things we've been doing. Just catching up with the listeners, what we've been doing in the interim.
Sis, we've both been working out.
We did.
I've
we
got
started
muscles going. Yeah.
Look at you, muscles.
I do.
I started lightly exercising, and that has been, I'm not going to say it's been easy because it continues to challenge me, but I'm really, really glad that I finally got my act together to do that. And I've been working out 5 times a week, and I'm about to bust it up to 6 times a week.
Woo!
But lightly working out. But I'm showing up for it, baby.
That
showing up.
Awesome. I have been walking like 3 to 4 miles a day.
Camion.
Like 5 to 6 days a week. And then working out like with weights 3 days a week.
Yeah. We also have both separately and together, we've done some really interesting anti-racist work.
Yes,
we've done some really interesting studies and conversations from all sorts of different teachers. And that has been really great. Eye-opening, sometimes challenging, but like in a great sort of this feels like I'm growing kind of way. Very eye-opening. And man, do we as individuals, as a nation, as a world, have a lot of work to do. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I get very upset by how blatant racism and white supremacy shows up on the scene.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm also extremely inspired by what feels like chronocentrism? I don't want to be chronocentric, but it feels like a historic, like a bit of a sea change is happening.
In a good way. Yes.
In a good way, where people are really taking this time to learn a lot and make internal changes and hopefully larger organizational or systemic changes.
Yeah.
And so that's exciting.
I also am incredibly inspired by that. And I think we can't underestimate what a potentially positive effect this pandemic has had on people's ability to protest. I think about, you know, there are a lot of times when people feel inspired, but we were all so stuck in the machine and the like, yeah, I'd love to go protest. I got to work. Yeah. And suddenly people did not have to go to work. They might have wanted to be working, but they were out of work. They were either laid off or on, oh my God, what's the other word? When you have been furloughed.
Furloughed.
And in a very strange confluence of events, so many people who wanted to participate in ways that time would have limited them in the past were able to participate. And some of that is showing up in person to protest, but in others it's, you know, it's writing letters or doing online campaigns, but people had time and were like, yeah, is there anything more important than this? No. So
sometimes when we're living in these days, like literally in the day, reading the news, seeing what's happening in the world, I think, how is this going to be written in the history books? Mm-hmm. I don't know that there'll be a definitive telling of it, but it's a complicated, interesting, terrifying, amazing, spark-filled time.
It sure is. And we're still yet to see what the next chapter holds because we're still fighting the good fight.
So lots of stuff going on, lots of good work, lots of hard work, but really, really good, necessary work. Cams, when are we coming back?
Well, Suze, I think we've got a little bit more work to do.
We're in school too. We didn't mention
that's
that.
Right. We're also in school.
I don't know if we've ever talked about that. We're in school. We're
totally
in
trying
class.
To get smart. Yeah.
We are getting smarter and better. So between our schoolwork and our planning for next season, we need a little more break. But really, it's not a break.
Really
we're working
a break.
Like crazy nerds. Settle down over there.
Yeah.
But we did want to pop in and because we said we'd be back in September, so we're back.
But we want to finish this class. Get our shit together and deliver a really, really great season 2 for you.
The deuce.
The deuce.
But in the meantime, friends, we hope this put another bunch of sparks in your file. Listen to us. If there is a spark that you'd like us to explore in season 2, aka the deuce, or if you've taken a spark and you've fanned it into a creative flame and you'd like to share that, won't you email us at thesparkfile@gmail.com or you can submit it through our website, thesparkfile.com.
We will even take your feedback, but you know the price of admission. First, you got to share a creative risk that you have taken recently.
We're not joking about that. Please follow us on social at The Spark File and be sure to subscribe, rate, and 5-star review this podcast. If you like this podcast, we really do hope you'll share it with people you love. And if you didn't like it, good news for you. You get another break from us until we come back in full force in November.
God, if something tickles your fancy and gets your creative juices flowing... We are writing you.
I love the
you.
Idea. I'll just interrupt you to say I love the idea that there's people that keep tuning into this podcast, tuning in like it's a radio, keep tuning into
tuning
this podcast
in.
And just hate listening
really
to it.
I really don't like this. I don't know how you got
really
me to listen
like
to
it.
Another episode.
Well, it's on you,
well,
ding dong.
Either way, we're writing you a forever permission slip to make that thing that's been knocking at your door. It's your turn to take a spark and fan it into a flame.
You got
to
take it.
And make it.
Bye.
We'll see you soon. We'll see you in November.
We'll see you soon.
For sure.
When I bump into something that inspires me, I dump it in my spark file. Could be something that I want to make or how I want to be. I pump it in my spark file. I
jump into my spark fire. Let's open up the spark fire.